Welcome to CrimeWire, the place for information, news, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in anytime during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or family member and would like to send CrimeWire information on an unsolved or suspicious death case or have a specific crime-related topic you'd like to have discussed on a future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. I'm Kim Colton, Director of Research for CrimeWire, and I'll be manning the switchboard and monitoring the chat room. And now let me introduce to you my co-host and partner in crime of tonight's show, founder and president of Imagine Publicity, Delilah Jones. Hi, Delilah.
Hey, Kent. Hi, everybody. Yeah, we're partners in crime on and off the air, aren't we?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. And do we have Aaron on the line yet?
No, we do not. And I do want to tell our listeners that I'm expecting a call from Aaron Cervantes, who is with Citizens Against Homicide, to give a they have an interesting, very interesting conference coming up in Las Vegas this year, and she was going to call in and give a little talk to us about that. She has not called in yet. If she does, we'll try to fit it in maybe at some time during the show or at the end of the show or something. So not yet. So I'll let you go ahead and introduce our first of all, you can talk about the theme of the show, which I love.
Oh, let's hear it.
And introduce our guest, our
special
guest.
Girls' night. We're going to show the guys how it's done.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
This is crime. And, you know, we have a wonderful guest tonight. I am just so excited. It's been a long time since I've talked to her, but I do keep up with what you do, so don't think I don't. And I'm just so excited to have Cheryl McCollum back on the air. And welcome, Cheryl. She's the director of the Cold Case Research Investigative Research Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. And they have worked on several high-profile crimes. And she teaches students that actually, you know, these kids are there to learn this stuff. They don't get class credit. It's volunteer. It's just a fabulous program, and the things that they do just are really exciting. So welcome, Cheryl, and what are y'all working on these days?
Well, I appreciate being on the show. I'm just a huge fan of you and Kim both, Delilah, but, honey, we've got a lot of cases right now. We're working on Lavina Johnson, a young woman that died over in Iraq while serving her country in the Army. And her case is extremely complex and questionable. We've got Sean Beatty, who was killed in Oklahoma. Her house was completely destroyed by fire, and she was unfortunately on the inside of that when that occurred. And we've studied the arson patterns and all that sort of stuff. We actually went to Oklahoma and did kind of a boots-on-the-ground look at that crime scene because Sean's husband has left it exactly like it was. So we were able to actually work that pretty solid. We've got the Morrisford Bridge case in Georgia where four people were killed, and this was July 25th, about 64 years ago. So that's a fairly cold case, but we've had some success with that case because even though it happened in 1946, we were able to go back out and excavate the land, and we recovered 84 bullets, fragments, or casings from that scene.
That's
that was
amazing.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
that was
that
an awesome,
amazing.
Awesome day. And I got to give all the credit to Terry Powis, who's an archaeologist that is with Kennesaw State University. And Dr. Powis and his students came out and worked with my students. And they had the archaeology side, and we had the crime scene side. And then some students from Georgia State came over, and they had sort of, you know, the computer equipment that could show exactly how many centimeters each bullet was in the ground. And it was an awesome day. This is a tremendous day. So we're busy over here, and we're working another case, Effie Mae Hall. And Effie Mae Hall was killed in the early 80s, and we're attempting to try to help the Atlanta Police Department locate roommates that she may have had that could maybe shed some light on what happened to her. So we're busy, but, you know, we've had some success with other cases. I guess our biggest claim to fame has been Shonda Levy, but we worked Natalie Holloway. We're the ones that said publicly that we believed that Jorgen Vandersloot would reoffend within 5 years, and obviously you know the result of that.
Right.
We've worked the Boston Strangler. We've worked the Missing and Murdered Children of Atlanta. We've worked Tupac Shakur. So we've worked some pretty high-profile things.
Yes.
Well,
sounds
so interesting.
Everything. I mean, you talk about your group doing the cold case investigation, and then you have the police for all of these different entities. How does that all come together to give results? And the results that your students get, I'm assuming, you turn over to the investigators and they take it from there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. What happens is we either get cases from a law enforcement agency or a district attorney, or we get them from the family directly. And so, you know, what we'll tend to do is we have colleges across the country. It's not just Atlanta. But we've got Auburn University in Montgomery. We've got Faulkner University in Alabama, Metro State College of Denver, Kennesaw. I mean, we've worked with several colleges all over, and each college has its own area of discipline. So what we'll do is we'll take a case, and everybody gets the exact same information, the autopsy report, the case file, the witness statements, et cetera. And like CHI in Philadelphia, they do crime scene reenactment. We do suspectology. AUM does victimology. Faulkner, you know, they'll put together the crime analysis. So everybody does something different, and they work independent. And when you're done, everything comes to me for the clearinghouse, and hopefully it lines up to show the same person or type of person is what we're hoping. And sometimes, you know, we don't have the success that we want, like with Amber Hagerman, the little girl that started the Amber Alert. We worked real closely with her mom, Donna Norris, and Detective Ford. And we did everything we knew to do to try to generate new information. We came up with an unusual way of trying to target folks by using a comic book. And that even made its way to Good Morning America. So we know for a fact 4 million people looked at that online. So if nothing else, we started a conversation. But it didn't have the end result that we wanted. But we all kind of think that we pinpointed the same type of person, but we don't know the person in her particular case. But, you know, go ahead.
I was just wondering on Amber, did you have I thought you had a profiler weigh in on that.
We do,
okay.
And that's what I'm saying. Everybody says, yes, this is the type of person. But, like, I can't tell you a name. I can't tell you, you know what I mean? Like, go re-interview this particular person. We just know the type. And I think Detective Ford was already pretty well schooled on that as well, because once we, you know, turned that over, we were done, you know. But, no, we have profilers. We use psychics and clairvoyants. We use ex-detectives. We got ex-FBI agents. We've got stalking experts, blood splatter experts, crime scene experts. So the students work the case. It's their case. But then national experts come in and help them. So we've had, you know, Holly Hughes and Betsy Ramsey and Leslie Bailey and Vince Velasquez and Sean LaGrua. I mean, unbelievably talented people come and help as well. So it's not just the students. I mean, their theory is so sound that all these national experts will accept it when it's all said and done. So by the time Lou Harris is done with something, he's a former FBI profiler. I mean, he knows what he's doing. So if the students give him something, they work together. And then like we've got Cindy Fascitelli, the psychopathologist, and she takes it and she adds or takes away. We've had people that are expert in witness statements, and they'll break down, this is what he said, but this is what he meant. It's just a tremendous, you know, Dr. Hodges does that for us. So all these people that you've seen on the internet and know something about have willingly given their time and talents. And the remarkable thing, and I want to point this out, we are only as good and as strong as the people that say yes to us. And it has shocked me in 10 years not one person has ever said no to me. And that, to me, says a lot about the integrity of the people that do this type of business. Nobody's been too busy. Nobody wants to get paid. Because I don't have any money. So, I mean, I can't pay any of the experts either. Everything is volunteer. I don't get paid to do it. Because I think once you sometimes factor money in, you kind of take away from what the real work is. So we all have real jobs. This is something we do on top of our real job and all that.
Well, you know, it's true. In a lot of different arenas, what you find is the advocates out there, like yourself, that, you know, really on the job for the work itself and not necessarily for the check, are the ones that really kind of get things done and come up with innovative new technology or new ideas, and it's more about the passion for getting the case solved or getting, you know, getting this particular area of their expertise out in the open, and that's more important. So
it is. I agree.
Every advocate better have a day job.
Oh, amen. No doubt. No doubt. Right.
Well, what are we, you know what, now tonight, our theme is Let's Hear It for the Girls, and we are going to be discussing cases of, well, I think top on our list, ladies, is Jody Arias and Casey Anthony. Who would like to go first?
Go ahead, Cheryl. What do you think about the Arias case? I mean, you know, these are bad girls. Let's face it.
Sure.
You know,
they're sociopaths.
The signs are all pointing to you know, that she's the perpetrator here. What do you think, and what does your expertise tell you?
Well, I mean, a bloody fingerprint is a money tree to me, because that proves you were there while the person was bleeding and you did not call 911. That's going to be problematic for her. The fact that she's changed her story 3 times is also going to be problematic. The fact that she colored her hair, the fact that she went to another person that I think was to set up an alibi, the fact that she called his phone repeatedly trying to act like she didn't know where he was and why he wasn't answering, the fact she hacked into his voicemail, all of these things are going to come back to bite her. It's really difficult for me to, in this day and time with so much on TV. I mean, Nancy Grace educates people every night. And when somebody still says, I stabbed him 27 times in self-defense, but didn't see the need to call the police at all, something's not right about that story.
Well,
the rental car. Oh, yeah, she lied repeatedly. But,
repeatedly.
I mean,
she finally came up with one, stuck with it.
And she stuck with it, and frankly, she stuck with the wrong one, because she stuck
with
the one that's probably the dumbest. And what she, you know, which for us is good. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'll take stupid, you know, because that makes it a lot easier to work, because nobody's buying it. Now, we learned from Casey Anthony, though, stupid sometimes works, because she said a bunch of stuff that made no sense, and she is as free as you and I right now. And she's one of those people that I will, you know, forever hate what happened, because that's an example of when the system just fails the victim. And
absolutely.
You know, and I said publicly on Nancy Grace, and I will say it again, I believe, and I said this way before, so I was not Monday morning quarterbacking. I never believed they were going to get murder one. And I actually got hate mail over it. And people were saying, I can't believe you, of all people. I'm not saying I ever believed she didn't do it. I didn't believe they had murder one. So I was fearful that she had been charged.
Yeah, she was overcharged, possibly.
Yeah, she was charged incorrectly.
Incorrectly, yeah. I read Jeff Archer's book, which is amazing, and it was cathartic at the same time, because I think everybody feels the pain over that. But it's a wonderful book, by the way. I recommend it to anybody and everybody. Please read that book if you have any interest in this case at all, because he explains so much. But I agree with you, Cheryl. I think that it was just, you know, maybe not first-degree murder, not I don't, second degree, I think they would have found her.
Yep.
The judge, I think it was Judge Strickland, who was the first judge on this case, I could be wrong about his name, but he had said that, you know, another problem with the jurors was that, and this happens in a lot, not just this case, but that they don't understand the meaning of reasonable doubt.
Absolutely.
They think if they're 99.999% sure she's guilty, but that 1%,
yep,
she's not, they think, oh, well, I guess that's reasonable doubt. Well, it's not
right.
Reasonable. It may be doubt,
right.
But it certainly isn't reasonable. Okay.
Well, do you think the juries really have a good understanding between murder one, murder two?
No.
Do you think they really know? I don't think they know.
No. Sometimes they don't, but in this case, and again, I've said this from day one, and this is something Holly Hughes and I even debated on TV, is that they should have charged her with everything they wanted to, but they should have added illegally disposing of a body.
Oh, yeah.
If nothing else, she should be doing 5 years for that. So if it were an accident, or if it was the chloroform, or if it was deliberate, no matter what, she put that baby in a trash bag and threw her in the woods. Done.
Mm-hmm.
There's no excuse in that, no matter what happened before that. And there's this thing where they say, oh, you're just throwing the book at them. That's what the book is for. Throw it at
absolutely.
Them.
Well,
charge them with
think,
everything.
What do you think makes these women tick? I mean, you know, we're talking two different crimes here with Arias and Casey Anthony. But what is in their heads? What is making them tick? How can they just, you know, we don't expect it from a woman, definitely. But they're out there, and
women,
we're seeing
it more and more. But if they understood history, they would. I mean, you can go back as far as Lizzie Borden. I mean, there's a little poem about her, and Lizzie Borden taught you could kill two people and get away with it long before OJ. So, I mean, women have always killed. It's just we kill sometimes very different. A lot of times we like poison. So when somebody like Lizzie takes an axe, people are like, oh, that can't be. And when you have somebody like Susan Smith in Union, South Carolina, that kills these two precious babies, you think that couldn't have happened. She had to have been carjacked. Because anybody that's had one labor pain is not going to believe you could do that. So they just ignored it. It's got to be a guy that carjacked her. And then reality sets in and logic takes over and you say, wait a minute, who's going to carjack somebody in Union? To go where? And then her story makes less and less sense. And then as you talk to other people that have children, and they say, look, you know, I work at Walmart, or I'm a third grade teacher, or I'm a flight attendant, and I'm telling you that guy would have had to shoot me in the face to get me out of that car. I'm not leaving my children. So when you hear this from people that are not in the Army, they're not in law enforcement, they don't carry guns for a living, say they would take a bullet for their children, then you know there's something wrong with Susan Smith. So her story
Well, yeah, it broke apart, but I think that you're asking what the, almost like the common denominator, and I think it's sociopathic tendencies.
Sure, but sometimes you can be a sociopath and not kill your own children. And so what I'm saying is you're looking for somebody that, because they acted on it in a way, so I don't believe that Susan Smith and Casey Anthony had the same motive. I really don't. I think motive is personal, and I think you did something for your benefit, whereas another sociopath did a similar crime but for a different benefit that they believed was a benefit. Some people kill for money. Some people kill out of jealousy. Some people kill because they were wasted. Some people kill because they're mad at somebody else and they're going to get revenge that way. So it just depends. I mean, the stepmother to the little girl, I can't think of her name, it starts with a Z, I think, that was deaf and had cancer in her leg. Remember?
Oh, yes.
And they,
I remember.
Did they put her in a wood chipper? Did they burn her? I mean, good God. There's no motive that I'm ever going to understand. So sometimes we, you know, Kim, I agree with you, we say, well, they're a sociopath. But that doesn't tell me everything, because I know plenty of people that just don't give a shit, that don't kill anybody. There's a difference. And these people are getting something so sinister out of it.
Yeah, and the sociopaths, they just have no remorse, no sadness, even after fact, let alone the motivation that,
sure.
that
oh,
causes
yeah.
them to do it in the first place. But after the fact, after they've already committed this horrendous crime, they can sit
mm-hmm.
there stone-faced and
yep.
feel nothing. And
right.
you know, that is, again, it's another area that's very difficult for a so-called normal person, whoever that might be, to really feel and understand, as, you know, like Arias, like Casey Anthony, you know, they show a lot of common denominators. In fact, Doc Bond has written a couple of posts about the common denominators between the two. And
no sadness, no remorse. Exactly.
There's no emotion. There's no connection to that person that they murdered.
Absolutely. They're not bonded to anything that has emotion and meaning and love and caring. They're not. I agree. But, you know, it's funny. We have a prosecutor in Atlanta named Sheila Ross, who's awesome. And Sheila said, what motive could I give you for killing a child that you could accept? And there's
yes, there
not
is
one.
None. No.
So I'm not going to get hung up on motive. I just want to go ahead and put you in prison so that I don't have to worry about you. So that's kind of where I'm at, you know, because I can't make you okay. And you know, that person just doesn't need to be out, which is the reason we put so much into these cold cases, y'all, because with budget cuts and everybody closing cold case squads all across the country,
yeah.
they're basically telling people, hey, in this state, in this city, you can get away with murder. And that's
oh,
not
yeah.
okay. That's not a good message.
No.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Do you think either Cheryl or Delilah, do you think that Jody Arias and Casey Anthony were both, they had good looks, attractiveness. Do you think that weighs in a jury's decision?
I know it.
You know, like, was
sure.
was Casey too pretty to be guilty, or is Jody Arias too pretty for the death penalty? I mean, what are your thoughts on that, ladies?
I can flat tell you it weighs. I don't know how much, but certainly it is an absolute factor. And the thing is, Casey Anthony, some of those pictures of her, she looked fine. She looked cute. And then other pictures, she just looked crazy. So it almost made you feel sorry for her. Like, mentally, is she deteriorating, right? Because one of the problems I personally had with Casey's case, and I will be straight out with this, every single picture of her with the baby, she looked happy. That baby was well cared for. She was healthy. She was cute. She was dressed appropriately. She's playing with her on the ground. She's holding her. They're both smiling. They're both laughing. There wasn't one picture where you just went, oh, my Lord, she hates that baby. Not one. So you have to question then what in the world happened. And then when she comes out with, well, my father molested me, there's going to be a lot of people that absolutely hands down believe it. Because there's got to be an answer for this kind of breakaway. There has to be. That baby was photographed every day, playing every day, singing songs, smart, happy, clean, dressed like a doll baby. What happened then, Kim? Something bad, and something maybe, just maybe. And that's why I think the jury was looking for this. So when he starts talking about imaginary friends and all that and the accident in the pool, they were just like, we don't know what happened. But it was bad, and maybe, just maybe, you know?
And we still don't know. We still don't know.
And we still
really
don't know,
happened.
Which is the reason she walked out of there. Because if you don't
yeah.
know, that is reasonable doubt. And, y'all, I couldn't go anywhere without people coming up to me and saying, you know what, I think it was an accident. I think that baby drowned in the pool. And then the next person would say, she killed her outright. And then somebody else would say, well, I don't think she meant to kill her. I think maybe she gave her too much of something. So if you can't get 9 people in your social circle to ever agree, you ain't going to get 12 strangers to agree.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
the experts on any of these shows, everybody's got a difference of opinion of what happened. And it's all conjecture because
oh,
we
yeah.
don't know. So.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is somebody in that family knows what happened. Somebody
oh,
knows. And how it just boggles my mind how they can even live with themselves.
Exactly. And I think they knew at the time. I mean, they knew.
Sure.
They knew then. And then that's what I think turned the public so against Cindy Anthony, especially, because
absolutely,
she just continued to deny. But she was used to it. That's one thing Jeff explains in his book,
mm-hmm.
is the dynamics in that family and why that happened. And, I mean, denial just isn't a river in Egypt, right?
Absolutely. And if you remember,
so,
Cindy Anthony even gave law enforcement the wrong hairbrush.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So from Jump Street, she was trying to basically give them bad evidence.
Yeah, she's a registered nurse and she didn't know she was pregnant. She thought it was bloating. And,
and we all saw
the picture of her at somebody's wedding, I forget who. But it was just like, are you kidding me? But this that was such an ongoing theme in this dysfunctional
family. Because they knew how ill she was.
Right.
And they still know. And here's, again, my prediction. She will reoffend in some way. It won't be homicide, but it's either going to be a DUI that hopefully doesn't involve hurting anyone. It's going to be something. Because when you take mental illness and you take basically being on house arrest, which is what she is, she can't go anywhere, she can't work, she can't have a normal life, she will spin out of control. And if she ever gets any money for a book or a movie or anything else, you factor money and crazy with drugs or alcohol, Katie, bar the door. You'll hear from her again, I promise you. It might take a while, but just like OJ, she will go to jail or prison for something. There's no way she can stay healthy. They can't
from
protect her too
to
long
God's
either.
Ears.
Well, it'll happen. It really will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you can stay locked up in a psychological prison like that.
Once everybody gets paid. Yeah, and once everybody gets paid, they're not going to be interested in letting her use a beach house and hide her. They'll be like, you can go, we're done with you. And that's when you're going to see it. When she doesn't have eight people protecting her and hide her.
Jose Baez is still protecting her, still.
Of course, because he ain't finished getting paid.
It's all about the money.
Hey.
For the money.
One of the, I think, it was Judge Strickland. I got that name in my head, but it was the first judge, not the one that actually proceeded with the trial and ended with the trial, but it was the other guy, Judge Strickland, and he said, somebody asked him, who was the most surprised person in the courtroom when the verdict of not guilty came down? And he said, Jose Baez.
Right.
He was the most surprised. You know.
Right. Well, you know what, Kim?
Oh,
do you remember Robert Kardashian's face when OJ was found not guilty?
Oh, yeah. That's a priceless
moment. That's like a priceless moment. Like, somebody hold me up. What the hell? Yes, awful.
He kind of looked around the room like, are you kidding me?
Like he just exhales like he's going to faint. Like, not in a good way, but faint like in a bad way.
He was just absolutely shocked.
It was awesome.
Well, OJ will, you know, everybody knows. I wonder what's OJ about his kids, you know, like, what's the dynamics there now? Do they realize, because they're older now, they can read, they can listen to everything, they can do what they need to do. I think he's still in prison.
He's in prison. But Kim, keep in mind, they can read his book in his own words.
Oh, yes, they can.
I mean, that's him.
What does that tell you?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we can talk about these women all night. We can talk about, you know, Ramsey. I mean, Patsy Ramsey was a piece of work, too. You know?
Oh, yeah.
so on the fence with that.
Are you?
I am. I just...
Okay.
I know. I'm just like crazy because I know
she... I think
she,
that's one of the most talked about cases over the years. I remember... You know, like the first time I got on the internet, I think, and on internet forums, and that was the case. It was the JonBenet Ramsey case. Everybody was debating every single teeny tiny, eeny weeny piece of evidence. And it caused, you know, it caused like these big wars, so to speak, online. And it's still going on. I mean, we're still debating that case up until today. And
sure.
I thought Peter's take on everything was very interesting
last week. And let me just preface, Peter Hyatt, we had a show last Tuesday, and JonBenet, and we are going to continue that in a few weeks, because that is one heck, and Peter is just unbelievable as far as his statement analysis.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yep.
He's fantastic. But I just have such a hard time with this whole thing.
Let me just leave you with one thing, and I'm going to let y'all use Peter Hyatt. But if you read the autopsy report, there's only one line in the whole thing you need to really look at. And it says chronic vaginal injury.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Come on now. That was not
chronic,
a stranger.
Chronic being the operative there.
So, yeah. Anyway, it's all good, but I appreciate tonight. I have enjoyed it. I've actually got to get back to work right now, though. But Delilah, call me.
We've got 30 minutes left.
How many?
30. And I wanted to talk about Diane Downs.
Oh, gosh.
Oh,
yeah.
Cheryl.
Speaking of crazy. All right. Well, listen.
Cheryl.
I tell you what. why did I think
don't
it was a 30-minute show? I'm so sorry. Okay, start with Diane Downs. You tell me your take on Diane Downs, and I'm going to jump in. Go.
I am fascinated with this case. I was when I first read Ann Rule's book.
Mm-hmm.
Ann Rule, who is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then I saw the movie with Farrah Fawcett.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I mean, oh my God. This is again another woman just like Casey Anthony, just like Jodi Arias, who
mm-hmm.
just thought sociopath. She's a sociopath.
All of them, the common denominator here is they put their own needs and wants and their own line of thinking first.
Oh,
right.
That's a sociopath too, right, Cheryl?
Like when you smile in the mugshot because you know it's going to be online.
Oh, that's a good one. I never realized that.
Look, go look at Jody's mugshot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
Now that's some pure narcissism there.
Absolutely.
Oh, that is
because she knew, man,
wild.
This is fixing to go viral. This is going to be everywhere. So let me go ahead and get
Diane
the 8x10.
Yeah. Diane Downs did the same thing. She smiled.
That's what I'm telling you.
Oh,
and they're not smiling because they're sick. They're smiling because they know it's all about me, baby.
Yeah.
Got to look good.
Got to look good.
But Diane, you know, this was May of 83. And she killed one of her children, and the other two were disabled.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it very interesting that the prosecutor adopted her children.
Right.
Isn't that
remarkable?
It's remarkable.
But
it
goes back to what you and I said earlier. Most people in this business are in it for the right reason, and they can't
mm-hmm.
give enough. I just had, like I told you, Holly Hughes was here, but Alex Manning came with her, and Alex Manning was a police officer, officer of the year. She was a GBI agent. She was a firefighter. I mean, she's done everything. She's given as much as anybody can give, but she gave a kidney. I mean, those are the kind of people that we're used to being around. So
yeah.
when somebody tells me, well, how can you be in this business and not be jaded, because you see the very worst that people can do to each other. And you're right.
Okay.
But I also get the benefit of seeing the very best that people can be toward each other. I see that, too, and I see that mostly.
Oh,
like in Connecticut, 26 people were killed. How many people prayed and how many people went there and how many people sent things and how many people did the right thing? They had more than 26 Hell's Angels stopping protesters. They had more than 26 police officers and firefighters and ambulances and EMTs. So there's always good, always wins. Good always outnumbers evil. I promise you. I promise you.
Wow.
9/11 took 3,000 people. How many people gave blood and how many people gave money and time and, again, donated anything they had? Home Depot, I know this story for a fact. Home Depot, when 9/11 happened, sent every single truck they had to New York City. Hammers, nails, gloves, generators, every truck. There's no telling monetarily what that was. It wasn't about what it cost Home Depot just in gasoline, just in merchandise. If we have it on a truck and New York needs it, that's where it's going. That's what I'm used to. And I don't know how that can't
Cheryl,
be a good day.
That is such a great perspective.
But
let
listen,
all...
I love both, but I got to go do some good right now.
All right.
But call me back, and next time I'll know it's an hour and not 30 minutes, okay?
You got
okay,
it.
Okay, baby.
I'll talk to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Bye. Bye. Oh, Dee, isn't that just the great
ending, because she's right.
It is.
You know, if we didn't think that way, if we didn't look at things in that perspective, then, you know, we'd all be raving lunatics.
Right. We'd be, you know, want to hang ourselves in the closet or something, you know. That is just
well, and you know, I had a conversation with somebody the other day about the Sandy Hook tragedy and now the outrage about gun control and things like that, and I think we see this, Kim, every time there is a huge national tragedy like this, we so quickly have to find something somewhere somehow to blame, and I think it's only human nature. And then we after the shock wears off, it's like, well, what are you going to do about it kind of a thing. And, you know, as Cheryl was saying, you have all of these good people that just show up. They show up wherever it is and somehow shout that good pixie dust all over it. It's tragic, but if you look back to the beginning of time, there has been tragedy. And...
Oh, yeah.
And violence and evil and icky. But she's right. Good always wins.
It does. It does. It has. Like you're saying, history shows that there's been all these things. History also shows that there's been all these great things. So, you know.
Yeah. We tend as a society to dwell.
I just am overwhelmed right now with her and her ending to that, and just to remember that, because it helps.
Absolutely, it does. And, you know, for someone in the business that she's in and sees the things that she does, and, you know, and all advocates, all people who work with victims and who are out there trying to make the world a better place.
You're right. We're all trying to be that uplifting.
Yeah. But unfortunately, our mainstream media and news reports don't report on things like that. It's not going to get good ratings. And so, you know, we tend to have to listen to the tragedies banged into our heads 24 hours a day. And to me, that's just not a healthy thing. I don't watch the news anymore. I really don't. I mean, you see enough just in passing. And there's so many people, news junkies out there that have it on all the time. And it's just,
all
I don't know. I can't deal with it anymore. I don't want to know.
I know. It's like, I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know. And
so what other mean girl, bad girls do you know about?
Well, let's talk. You know what I'm thinking? Let's talk about Marie Nell. Do you know about her?
No,
she,
not that one.
Well, it's N-O-E is her last name. And she was born in 1928, and she's an American serial killer.
Oh.
She murdered 8 of her children between 1949 and 1968, but she was not convicted until June of 99.
Oh, my
she
gosh.
She had 10 children. All 8 children were healthy at birth, were developing normally. The last two died of natural causes, which I kind of doubt, but whatever.
Yeah.
There were detectives that were back in 98 who had kept such case file, you know, such, well, they kept case files, and they finally brought them, and now they're in their 70s and 80s, these men, they're forensic experts, and they brought them to the district attorney and said, look at this. And praise God, she was convicted in 1999 for killing 8 of her children.
But you know what went wrong in the first investigation? Let's just conjecture here for a minute. The first one that was killed, what went wrong? How did they miss it? Was it? I mean, I'm not real familiar with all of this as you are, but
well, it was 1949 for one thing,
right?
And they chalked it up to sudden infant death syndrome, but some of the children were, let me think. Some of them were 5 days old and some of them were 14 months. So when I was reading about this, I thought 14 months? Sudden infant death syndrome? I don't think
so. Yeah,
so
they were all babies. Were all of the children killed that early in their life?
Yes, they were all babies. And
so
her last
like,
pregnancy.
I was just going to say it wasn't like she, you know, she had these children and then just couldn't deal with them.
I don't know. No, she just killed them one after one after one.
Gosh, that's just awful. You would wish and hope that somewhere along the line somebody would figure something out that would prevent the next one.
Well, this is why these detectives just pooled their information. These three men who were, like I say, one was blind at this time when they presented it to the district attorney, and he had enough to open the case. He was just like flabbergasted over this, and she was convicted. She pled guilty to 8 counts of second-degree murder and was sentenced to 20 years probation and psychiatric study. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, I think they need to study, I mean, deeply study this person, because God only knows what they're going to find out when they look too deep.
I know. And the only thing they say about her early life was that she was one of several children born of her to parents who had a troubled marriage. She contracted scarlet fever at age 5, which she later credited as the cause of learning difficulties. Mm-hmm. She dropped out of school as a young teenager to work and help care for a niece born to one of her older sisters when Marie was 12 and raised as Marie's sister. I wonder if she made it. Anyway, yeah. And then she met her husband, Arthur, and they had a brief courtship and eloped. And then they had children, like, you know, like I say, from 1949 here. The last one born was 1968. Richard, Elizabeth, Jacqueline, Arthur, Joseph Jr., Constance, Letitia, Mary Lee, Teresa, Catherine, and Arthur. Again, another Arthur. And they all died. And if it weren't for the persistence of the original investigators, she never would have been charged or convicted. But they just knew that this was, you know. And what triggered it? Who knows? I don't know.
Well, you know,
that's
like talking earlier with Cheryl, is we can't figure out the motivation. And the only thing that I can say as an opinion is, you know, there's definitely psychological disorders out there that include this, that can't be fixed. It can't be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And Sandra Brown has written extensively about, she teaches the mental health community about it. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a man or whether it's a woman,
it
really doesn't
matter. I love Sandra Brown. Yeah,
oh,
she's great.
I love her. Yeah, and her books are just fantastic on the subject. And it really does give you an understanding. Now, most of her work, she deals more with women than she does with men. So most of her writings are geared more towards women that she works with. But getting out of those types of relationships and you know, what to do beyond and how not to go back and find another one, because that's usually what happens. But there again, it's these psychological disorders and personality disorders that these people are so good. They're so good at wearing the mask that they want public to see. And what goes on behind that mask is pure evil and scary. And they're very, very apt to look for positions in power. So you see a lot of mm-hmm. these type people in politics and police departments and, you know, places that we tend to put our trust into. And, you know, there again,
right.
that's a scary proposition.
Yes, it is.
But another case, I don't know how familiar are you with the Julie Scheneker case, the mother in Tampa who murdered her two teenagers?
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with it. I saw it, and I was just like, what is this? She murdered her two teenage children because they, like, talked too much or something? What was that again?
I mean, apparently they were mouthy.
They were mouthy.
Most of the reports.
That was it. Yeah.
I can't wait to get Diane Fanning's new book is about that case. So as unfamiliar, I'm not that familiar with it now, but I can't wait to read the book. Then it'll be out in April. And actually you can pre-order it on Amazon now. It's called Sweep My Darlings. So... And it's going to be her 20th book, so we're really excited about that.
That's
really
great.
A big deal.
Congratulations, Diane.
Yeah.
She is one of my favorite authors. I mean, she really is. I've read several of her books, and
mm-hmm.
she's really good. I love the
way
she writes.
Well, she's dealt with a lot of cases, you know, not just men committing murder. A lot of the cases that she's written about are women who've committed murder. One of them in particular she wrote about on her blog just yesterday or the day before, because it was the anniversary of this man, Mike Severance, who went missing. And he was missing for something like, I think, 50-some days. And
mm-hmm.
until he was found, and this was like a really good guy. He was had done a couple of tours in Iraq and just kind of disappeared. And come to find out, it was I don't believe they were married, but it was a girlfriend, and she was convicted of his murder.
Wow.
So it's,
well, let's
go ahead.
This Jody Ann Arias is just so fascinating to me. I actually have two episodes of In Session on my on my DVR that I have to watch. It's just, you know, you're so busy and you're like, I don't want to see this trial, you know. But she is a piece of work. I mean, she stalked him. She took pictures of him.
I mean, she did it all.
Pictures. She did it all. I can't believe.
Well, what do you think, you know, since we're just like getting into this trial, how do you think it's going to end up? Do you think that this jury can give her the death penalty? Do you think they'll find her guilty?
Well, Dee, I tell you, I would hope so, because it's beyond a reasonable, emphasize, doubt that she premeditated this and she took his life. And I who knows, though? Who knows? After Casey Anthony, after OJ, you just got to shake your head, you know. Thank God Diane Downs was found guilty, you know, and still had a baby in prison.
I know.
What do
it
you
makes
think?
It,
what do you
there
think?
Again, you know, honestly, I don't know.
Beauty or looks are going to save her on this one, because she had, I don't know, she had too much, it's just too obvious.
Well,
but,
you know, the thing,
and
again,
we thought that about Casey, too. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Exactly. I mean, this is the debate. If this was, if she was a real skanky looking, drug addict type looking person,
oh, yeah.
I don't think they'd have any problem with it. But there again, this, you know, this plays into the jury. They have a very difficult time convicting an attractive white girl. I mean, it's just, and then, you know, where's the equality and where's the justice, and is this human nature, or, you know, what's the deal?
It's true. I mean, they look at her, but there is, when the evidence comes in that she changed her story three times, and her, I'm sure, like I said, I got this in my queue to watch, but she stalked him. And she was bitter over everything with him, and took the pictures and relished in his death. It just, I don't think her beauty can overcome that. What do you think?
I certainly hope not. I really, really hope not.
I'm always,
you can go to the whole death penalty debate and, you know, go for 10 hours on that, but
I know.
I just think it's, unfortunately, it is one of those sort of syndromes, so to speak, in the jury pool that is going to be difficult. I think they'll probably find her guilty. Whether they give her the death penalty or not is still very questionable in my mind, no matter how horrendous it is. I mean, they're looking at her. She's looking at them. They're right there. And
Good point. They
do it? You know, can
good
they
point.
Do it? I mean, we're looking at this from afar. We're not feeling it. We're not, you know, we're not sitting across the bar from her every day and every day. Who knows how long this trial
That's
will go
so
on.
True. Yeah.
And I think they, you know, I can't say I've never served on a murder trial jury. So I have no experience to fall back on or to base a judgment on, but it just seems to me, if you are in that room at that close proximity, you're going to feel either one of two ways. You're going to have that sympathetic empathetic thing going on, or you're going to be so angry at the evidence that you may go the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and find her guilty and give her the death penalty. So I guess if you've gotten, you know, there's so many psychologies going on with this whole thing. You've got the victim,
it
you've
is.
Got the perp, you've got the jury. You know, there's so many layers of stuff in a trial these days.
Oh, it's tremendous. Tremendous. You can hire people if you're being charged with murder, if you've got the bucks, you can hire people to walk you through everything and test you on everything. And it's just amazing what they can do.
It really is. It's mind-boggling at times, and I don't know. There again, we look to something to blame for. How did our system get to the point that it is now? Where is it any worse than it was? I mean, are trials today any worse than they were 100 years ago?
Probably not.
If you think about it, probably not. I mean, seriously, we don't remember. We tend to quickly forget. And you think of trials 100 years ago and judges with guns and take them out back and hang them. So really, I think we have these trials of the year, so to speak, with Casey Anthony, OJ, Scott Peterson, the ones that draw the most attention. But I guarantee you, all across America, there's probably more deviant people on trial than Jodi Arias. And we don't hear about
that. That's scary.
Yeah, well,
that's
scary. You know, that didn't make the news. It didn't make the news. So think about that. It's out there.
Oh, that kind of creeps me out a little bit because...
Well, it does me too when you think about it. We're just getting the tip of the iceberg, what you see on television and what we actually hear about in the media.
Oof.
That's just the tip of it, and probably down deep is worse than what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Well, that gives me a lot of food for thought, let me tell you.
Well, I hope you don't have nightmares.
OMG! What?
I said, I hope you don't have nightmares.
I know, right? Well, Delilah, we've got a minute left, and why don't you close out the show for tonight, my darling?
Well, it was a lot of fun.
It was.
I think, you know, the girls need to get together every once in a while and give our side of things, and it was a great show, and I thank Cheryl for coming. I'm sorry that she didn't realize it was an hour and not 30 minutes, but that's okay. We'll get her back again, and Lee and the whole gang. But next week, the show will be on again, next Tuesday. So tune in as we continue to analyze cases that report on families looking for answers and seeking justice. And we discuss crime-related topics with the experts. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play. Until next time, God bless and stay safe.
God bless. Thank you, Delilah.
You're
always a
good. Bye. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.